from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. As goes California, so goes the nation, they say. On November 6th, Election Day, Californians will decide whether to require the labeling of genetically modified food right on the package, on the supermarket shelf, or anywhere else for all to see. California ballot initiative Proposition 37 would make it mandatory. That's never been done in the USA. There's a fight on over whether it's necessary and what it would mean. This hour on Point, California's Prop 37, genetically modified food and the right to know. You can join the conversation. Do you want to know if there's a genetically modified organism, GMO, in the food you eat? Is it high time? Is it a distraction? Farmers, supermarket managers, kitchen cooks, what do you say? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Big battle underway in California. Big interests here, obviously. TV ads and more running now. Here's a radio spot that's been running on California stations in support of the labeling, in support of Prop 37.
What's for lunch? Maybe that quick slice of pizza and a cold soda. Or the salad bar. Or maybe even that sandwich made with love this morning. But whatever sounds good, we want to know what's actually in our food. That's why so many of us support Proposition 37, paid for by Yes on 37 for your right to know if your food has been genetically engineered. Supported by consumer advocates, makers of organic products, and California farmers. Major funding by Mercola.com, Health Resources LLC, and the Organic Consumers Fund.
There's a radio spot favoring Prop 37. Yes, we want labeling of genetically modified foods when it's there. The group No on 37 is backed by California and American Growers Associations of beets and soybeans and poultry and much more. But the big muscle behind it seems to be Monsanto and DuPont. They launched a series of online ads yesterday. Here's one showing an old school grocer in his little shop being swamped by piles of red tape falling from above.
The last thing small business owners like this grocer need is more bureaucracy and government interference. Prop 37 is a confusing labeling scheme that would tie him up with red tape and cost him and his customers thousands of dollars a year. And 37 would open the door to shakedown lawsuits. The whole thing is a big, tangled mess. Vote no on 37.
Shakedown lawsuits, piles of red tape falling from the heavens. Joining us first today from Sacramento, California, is Mark Lifshire. He covers business and politics in California's capital for the Los Angeles Times. Mark, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
So what would this proposition require exactly of California food labeling, Mark?
It requires labeling. So if it's a raw product, such as a fruit and vegetable, which isn't the most common thing to have GMO ingredients, it would say on the shelf or the bin. If it's a processed food or prepared food, which would be the most impacted, that would be something that came in a can or a microwave box or that was frozen, then it would have to say that it contains GMO ingredients. Or if they're not sure because they've been mixed in with organic or other products, it could say it might contain GMO ingredients.
How big a deal is it to have that done? What does it mean? Where would the labeling take place? Would the big food manufacturers have to have separate facilities or labeling lines for California? What do you know, Mark?
Well, obviously, what would happen, since California is the biggest market for most of these products, and it's at least 10% of the market, it would seem logical, as in other labeling requirements that the state has had for decades, that national manufacturers would just put it on everywhere. So passage in California could be a de facto labeling system for the whole United States.
They had to get 1 million signatures to get this on the ballot. That is a lot. Who were the primary movers in pushing it, Mark?
The biggest movers were the people who just generally are in favor of this, or the organic food industry. That would be people who grow organics, who process organics, who sell organics. And also people who just feel very strongly, health-type people, also food co-ops, and we have some sizable organic food manufacturers here in California of processed foods.
And who's come out most strongly against it?
It's the biotech companies, as you mentioned, Monsanto, Dow, and others who actually develop these genetically modified seeds that make the plants resistant to drought, or so they can use, they won't be killed by the pesticides and herbicides that are put on them. Also, the grocery manufacturers, Pepsi-Cola, Coca-Cola, all kinds of manufacturers of the ubiquitous products you see in supermarkets, Kellogg's, cereals, everything.
Genetically modified ingredients in many, many, many foods at this point, corn and soybeans, so many, and those end up, whether oil or sugars or you name it, in so many. Here's another one of those online ads. This, again, from those against the labeling of GMOs, genetically modified organisms, in California. From Vote No on 37, here's an excerpt from one of their ads.
They're at it again. Special interests pushing a proposition that would create more government red tape, more lawsuits, and higher costs. This time, it's Prop 37.
37 would give trial lawyers a special new right to file shakedown lawsuits against farmers, grocers, and food companies over the wording on food labels.
Look into the facts by visiting factson37.com.
Paid for by No 137, Coalition Against the Deceptive Food Labeling Scheme, sponsored by farmers, food producers, and grocers. Major funding by Monsanto Company, DuPont, Grocery Manufacturers Association, and more than 40 food company members.
Mark Lifshire with the Los Angeles Times. There are some deep pockets in the food business. What kind of money is being shelled out to fighting for and against, I guess, the proposition?
Well, the No campaign has raised or contributed about $30 million, which would put it up. There are 11 initiatives on the California ballot, including one that the governor is proposing to raise taxes and one that the unions are fighting to protect their right to make campaign contributions. But this would put it right there up at the top. The proponents have spent about... they've raised around $3 or $4 million, so it's about 7-1. The advantage for the proponents is that this is a very popular issue with the public, both nationally and in California polls show.
And how is the proposition polling at this point? It's, what, about 8 weeks till Election Day now, nearly 8 or 9. How's it look?
Well, the California Business Roundtable and Pepperdine University have been polling on an every 2 week frequency for all the 11 ballot initiatives. And this one, Prop 37, has been running about 3-1 in favor. It's around 65%. That's pretty overwhelming. National polls on a more broad subject, but still about labeling, they actually run 9-1 in favor.
9-1, that makes it look like, is it considered a shoe-in at this point? There have been efforts in the past that got turned around at the end by heavy counter ads. What do you think?
It's hard to tell, but with this close to the election, 3-1 is an awfully big margin.
Mark Lifshire with
there'll be a lot of TV ads still.
Mark, stand by there in Sacramento if you'd be good enough. It's great to have you from the LA Times. With us right now from Columbia, Missouri, is Nicholas Kalazian-Danakis. He is director of the Center for Economics and Management of Agrobiotechnology at the University of Missouri's College of Agriculture. Dr. K, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Tom.
What are the implications nationally for food production and sales if this goes through? Do you expect that this labeling would be all over the USA?
It's not quite clear to me that that will be ultimately the outcome. We'll have to, even if the proposition does get through California and becomes California law, the manufacturers, all the food manufacturers that have facilities all over the U.S. and service, obviously not just the California market, but the national market, will have to decide what's most economical and most viable for them. And the labeling issue is going to be very costly for most manufacturers, and my guess is that's why they are by and large opposing to it.
But how would they, I mean, we'll look at all the reasons they might oppose it, but distribution presumably is not by state, it must be by region. You know, a package of food that starts out in one direction could end up in another. I mean, they don't really know where the food's going to end up on the shelf, do they?
Oh, they do. The way that supply chains work today, there is a very, very strong understanding as to where products go. from every manufacturing facility. That is not the issue. The issue is more so, and it's going to vary by product. Is going to be it's going to vary by manufacturer. And let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
You have a manufacturer that has one plant for the whole U.S. Obviously, that's a much more difficult issue for them, because they obviously have to manufacture for the whole country.
Sure.
From one place. But in most cases, most manufacturers have many plants in different parts of the country, so they service different regional markets from each plant. And so it's going to depend on the size of the market, it's going to depend on the kind of product, it's going to depend on the manufacturer itself. And so it will be a different decision for each one of them.
I wonder, Mark Lifshear, if Californians are thinking that if they push this through sooner or later, other Americans in other states, maybe many, are going to want to know the same thing about GMOs.
Well, California would be the first state in the United States to do this, and there have been other efforts that have failed in other states. And keep in mind that the FDA for 20 years had said there's no difference between these foods. But about 50 countries around the world, including most of Europe, require labeling.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about California's Prop 37 on the ballot November 6th that would require labeling of genetically modified food. If it wins in California, it may become the national norm, labeling all over, and there is a fight over it. Here's a little bit more of the battle that's going on in California right now. This is from a group called CaliforniaRightToKnow.org. Been running this 2.5-minute spot. Here's an excerpt where a restaurant owner and a brewer, they're weighing in on why they say they will vote yes on Prop 37.
You know, it's not rocket science. 50 nations around the world require the labeling of genetically modified foods. It's pretty much every nation in Europe. All I'm saying is, just as you have the right to buy something that's genetically modified, if you think it's safe for your family and healthy for you, I should have the right to opt out of this experiment that I never agreed to be a part of.
I have a very simple philosophy. The truth should be easy to understand and not require special knowledge. I feel I have a right to know.
A right to know is at the heart of the Yes campaign. Yesterday, the No on 37 campaign launched a bunch of online video ads. A group of California and National Food Grower Associations with major funding from Monsanto and DuPont. Here's one of the new Vote No ads.
Let's see if Prop 37's proposed food labeling regulations make sense. This carton of soy milk would have to be labeled genetically engineered, but this carton of cow's milk wouldn't. Okay. Frozen pizza labeled, but delivered pizza not labeled? It's a little confusing. The meat in dog food labeled, but meat for people not labeled? What? Food made in America labeled. Food imported from foreign countries exempt if they simply claim they're exempt? Huh? Prop 37. It's deceptive and costly. Look into the facts.
The No campaign by Big Food. Mark Lifshear joins us from the Los Angeles Times. He's with us in Sacramento, California, covering this whole issue. Nicholas Kalazidonakis joins us from Columbia, Missouri. He is at the University of Missouri's College of Agriculture there. I mean, Mark, what about these exceptions they're talking about? Cow's milk, food from abroad, not required to label? What's up with that?
Well, animal products where the animal has eaten genetically modified food, say corn, that's exempt. If the animal itself has been modified in some way, it would not be exempt, although that's fairly unusual at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, alcoholic beverages are exempt, so it's interesting that the brewer was brought in.
Yeah, alcoholic beverages, even though they're going to have grain in them that may well be genetically modified.
Yeah, I mean, not, yeah.
Why was that exempted? Were they afraid of taking on, you know, big brewing at the same time as big food?
I'm not quite sure. I guess they just wanted to narrow it as much as possible. There are certain exemptions where it just got too complicated. I'm not quite sure what the reasoning is, but that was one exception. And the exemption argument is one that the opponents are playing pretty hard.
Dr. K, you hear in a couple of these ads by the No campaign, they're going hard at what they depict as confusion that will ensue here. But will this really be confusing? I mean, there'll be a label. It'll say GMO ingredients or not, I guess.
Well, you know, so my view is that with respect to the exceptions, what is being exempted from labeling is all food basically consumed away from home, so restaurants and so on.
Yep.
Products from livestock, foods like meats and so on, milk, organic ingredients. And so there are products that you might be consuming or buying at the supermarket that will require labeling, but exactly the same product being consumed at the restaurant would not. And so that's part of the discussion about the confusion. Generally speaking, what is really at the core of the discussion from the manufacturer's perspective is that you have commodities like corn, soybeans, sugar beets, sugar, and so on, that mm-hmm. that in essence translate into thousands of ingredients that are used in small amounts in just about every processed product that you buy
right.
in the supermarket. I mm-hmm. mean, lecithin in chocolates, soy flour in soy milk and a variety of other products, dextrose, fructose, corn flour and tortillas. I mean, you name
all over,
it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's all of this that then manufacturers will have to deal with it. And the question is, what manufacturers will choose to do? So back to the original question we mm-hmm. made, since manufacturers as a whole have really no dog in the fight, in most cases they might choose to do one of three things, either buy ingredients that are not genetically modified and mm-hmm. so not have to label, buy organic ingredients and again not have to label, or reformulate and again not have to label. So if all of them do the same thing, all of this cost will just be passed on to the consumer.
Well, two questions there. We'll ask about cost, but first of all, is there enough non-genetically modified quantity of these big staples, corn, soybeans, sugar beets, that food processors could actually shift to those non-GMO sources and have enough to, you know, make the food?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that the vast majority of genetically modified foods don't end up in foods. They end up in feed. So the vast majority of the corn and soybeans, for example, goes for animal feed. And that's part of why livestock products are being excluded from the labeling.
But still, you're saying GMOs are in almost every processed food we eat. Is there enough to keep producing those without those,
right.
in the U.S., without those GMO crops coming in?
Yes. So the amount that they go into the food ingredients is quite small. There are many products, so that adds to the complication of the cost, but the overall amount that goes into the product is very tiny. So it might be that in some cases, and maybe sugar is the biggest problem of all, but there might be that in some cases manufacturers might have to import small amounts from overseas, but generally speaking, they would be some amounts available to do the reformulation if you want.
Mark Lifshire, are Californians expecting that if this passes, they'll still have the same foods on their shelves, simply reformulated without GMO ingredients? Or are people speculating about a future where, I don't know, no Twinkies or you name it?
Well, I think people who buy Doritos are going to have Doritos as much as they want anytime they want to buy it. California has a history. Another proposition from the early 80s that passed called Proposition 65 that required ubiquitous labels of the state of California. A product contains chemicals known to the state of California to cause cancer, birth defects. And these labels, it's just a warning sign. It's all been all over the state for 25 years now, and people still put gasoline in their cars. They still buy certain foods. And what's happened lots of times with these products is that the manufacturers don't want to have this label. They see it as causing people not to buy their products, so they reformulate, and they tend to reformulate oftentimes on a national scale.
What's expected in terms of costs? We've heard that, the opponents are saying it'll drive costs up. Nicholas is saying it might as well. What's the conversation in California about food cost if the labeling law comes in?
There hasn't been a lot of conversation at this point. I think most of the people have made up their mind on this thing, even before the campaign really started. There's no doubt that it'll probably increase costs somewhat, food costs. Just like organic food, people switch to organic food, they're paying more for that.
Dr. K, what would you anticipate if this labeling comes in California or nationally? Does it really change costs, or does competition bring them right back down?
No, costs will go up, and it will go up across the board, because if all food manufacturers do reformulate up to a point, they will all bear the cost. And those at this point are a bit difficult to fully estimate.
What are you guessing? Pennies on the dollar? A cent or two, more or less?
Yeah, let me give you an example. And those would be an example like a back of the envelope type of calculation.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, in the U.S., we consume every year, this year, probably about $9 billion worth of soy oil.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the premiums that you pay for non-GMO soy oil, it's about 20% on the commodity price. So 20% on $9 billion would be about $1.8 billion. If only the Californians paid that, it would be about, $300 million. So just for soy oil alone. And so you can start adding oils, adding sugars, adding different ingredients along the way, and then all the cost of the reformulation, which is very, very, very costly to do for manufacturers, because that means changing recipes and so on. So there are a couple of estimates out there from people that have done this kind of work for California alone, and those costs vary from $1.2 to about $4 billion just for California. That does not assume the U.S. as a whole. And that is about $300 to $400 per family per year.
Mark Lifshire, if it ends up being that, you're watching the polls there. You think Californians are happy to pay it to know for the price, or don't they believe that the cost will be that significant?
I don't know if they're thinking about it. I think the people have been in favor of the labeling and the right to know, just like they look at the products now and they see all kinds of information. They say, why can't I have this extra bit of information in addition to how much salt there is or how much carbohydrates there are? Now, I don't think it's gotten to the point. Obviously, the no people are going to push the cost argument, and it may have an effect. But so far, the polls have not really budged.
Mark Lifshire with the Los Angeles Times joining us today from Sacramento, California. Mark, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Let's get a couple callers right here. Lansing, Michigan. Apachu is calling. Apachu, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. Great topic. Even if labeling becomes mandatory in California, eventually United States, ultimately all food will be GMO. A few large transnational corporations are taking over the world's food supply. To me, that's the source of the issue, the power that's been manufactured by these large transnational corporations. For example, according to Vandana Shiva, if my statistics are correct, she is saying that approximately 70% of seed is controlled by Monsanto. I think that's corn seed, soybean, and wheat seed. And when you, as a farmer, sign up with Monsanto, you have to sign a contract which disallows you from using your excess seed the following year. Also, if the seed that you have is viable and recreates seed, you cannot use that seed, or you're subject to a financial and criminal penalty. And she says that when you control the food supply, you have the power, the might of armies. And so the source of the problem is actually the incredible manufacturing of power that transnational corporations continue to exert upon the human population.
Apache, really, I'm glad for your call. And if I may, let us pick it up right there. Dr. K, it is certainly the case that when you get into GMO seed, there's a lot more control here, patent and otherwise, over how these can be used, the kind of research that can be done. Our caller is right that there's a concentration of power that comes along with the technology, is he not?
Yeah, it's an interesting issue and has been discussed very broadly. First of all, just a clarification.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of clarification relative to what your caller asked,
mm-hmm.
Corn and soybeans are basically the crops where much of this issue of concentration and market power is really discussed. Wheat is not part of the equation. Rice is not part of the equation. Most of the seed there is not distributed by large multinationals or owned by them. But anyway, going back to your question, one of the studies that we did back in 2010 was exactly this issue about how much, for example, choice of seed do farmers have? How much market power there is in the marketplace by the seed companies? And by market power, we typically, as economists, we analyze, for example, how much power they have on pricing the seed, and what do they do with the extra profits above
mm-hmm.
their costs?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we found, for example, is that all the extra profits above cost that all of those multinational companies that are involved in biotech and seed that they charge typically goes to R&D, research and development. So we found that about $3 billion a year is what is spent for R&D, and it's about the same amount as the extra profits that these companies generate. So
these GMOs are extra profitable, as I understand it.
Well, my point is that they would charge above their cost of production, right? So the question is, as a company, what do you do with these types of profits? And so, in essence, what they generate from their profits, they turn around and they put it into research and development.
Of course, from our caller's point of view, that R&D may further buttress their market position, and with that power. I want to get one more call before the break. Lisa in San Diego, California. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to give the mom's perspective, and mm-hmm. I really encourage all your listeners who are parents to really look into this issue. When we talk about these small amounts, it's in baby formula. It's in children's food. That those small amounts mean a lot to a growing baby or child. Number two, the fact that that our livestock won't be labeled is very, very concerning since we all eat so much meat.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, as a mom, I would be willing to pay any amount. It's pay now or pay later. If you look at the research, this is associated with so many health issues that are taking us down as a country. But me as a mom thinking about my family, I'm concerned about their health. So all
and Lisa, when the FDA says no problem here, what do you say? What are you thinking?
Well, if you look at the Center for Food Safety, there's a wonderful movie out that really debunks everything and a lot of what's been talked about today about the safety of these. They're actually not safe at all. They've been very dangerous to animals. They're dangerous. There's tons of research out there. It has been squashed. And if you look at some of the people who have done the research, academics, they have been gone after by big companies and basically silent.
Lisa, in San Diego, we're up against a break here, but I'm glad for your call. Thanks so much for calling in from California. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about California's Prop 37. It's on the ballot November 6th. This is a ballot initiative, 1 million signatures collected, and it's there. Polling right now would suggest it will pass, but there's a real fight here. It would require labeling of genetically modified food. If it wins in California, it may become the national norm. Certainly that has happened with California initiatives in the past, labeling all over, big interests at play here, business interests, consumer interests, right-to-know interests on the table. Nicholas Kalaitzin-Donakis is with us. He is director of the Center for Economics and Management of Agrobiotechnology at the University of Missouri's College of Agriculture. Two more guests with us right now from Davis, California. Kent Bradford is here. He's director of the Seed Biotechnology Center at UC Davis. Professor Bradford, thank you very much for joining us.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Doug Gurian-Sherman. He's senior scientist with the Food and Environment Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. He also writes the union's blog, The Equation. Doug Gurian-Sherman, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So we've got questions from our listeners. Let us put them right on. Terry in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Terry, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think this is an important question, and to me it comes down to being very personal. Under the headline of You Are What You Eat, I'd like to know more about the health effects of these types of foods. And also, I think it relates to a host of other issues, the Grow Local movement that's taken the country by storm, the obesity problem that we have nationwide, and also just all related to healthcare costs and us having more responsibility for our own healthcare costs down the line.
Absolutely. Terry, let us pick it straight up. Kent Bradford, Doug Gurian-Sherman, people very often hear this and they hear that, but you know, they may feel like they don't really know. Do we know at this point, Kent, if there's enough reason for concern or question that labeling makes sense around GMOs?
Well, I would say that labeling for the purpose of assuring people about the safety of genetically engineered foods is not really necessary. That is, the foods that are offered on the market have been through very rigorous testing and study. The ones that we're discussing today have been examined by at least three different agencies of the federal government. And in addition, hundreds of independent studies that have found no effects from the technology per se. That is, this is one of the problems with the Proposition 37 is that it wants to label for an entire technology, not about the specific change that was made in a specific food, but about a particular approach was used to improving the crops. We have about 90% of our corn and soybeans in the U.S. using these types of feeds, primarily for animals, as Dr. Kay mentioned earlier. I think after 15 years, trillions of servings, billions and billions of cows, pigs, chickens, and so on, I really think that if there were some really fundamental health issue about this technology, it would have appeared. I don't think that our livestock industry would continue to use these feeds if they were experiencing health problems in their animals. So I think the issue about whether they're safe really is a side issue, and it points to the sort of misleading approach to Prop 37. One is to label it the consumer's right to know, and no one certainly would disagree that consumers have a right to know what's in their foods. But their very first ads that they put out focus on other things, which is comparing GM foods to Agent Orange and basically trying to play the fear card and make people scared of their food. So that's why I don't like it. I think it's deceptive. I think it's anti-scientific, and it's really trying to make people scared of food that's perfectly safe and has been used for 15 years without any evidence whatsoever of health issues.
Doug Gurian-Sherman, let me bring it to you, but let me bring it, if I may, with one of the comments from online here. Rudolph writes to us and says, all foods are GMO. He says, mankind has for its history selected food plants for the desirable characteristics. Results have been hit and miss selection, desired genome. The present effort just makes it a science-based effort. What's the difference? What about the safety question and Rudolph's perspective on it, Doug?
Well, it's absolutely true that all breeding is genetic modification, but there are real differences between conventional breeding, and even some of the newer genomic forms of breeding that are use new understanding of the genome compared to genetic engineering. And the difference is, the biggest difference is you're manipulating genes that you've isolated from virtually any organism in the lab, and then you're putting them into a crop where it inserts randomly into the genome, which can potentially cause some disruptions in gene functions. But I think more fundamentally, it allows you to put things into the food supply that have never been in the food supply before.
And like what? You mean a genome structure that's never been seen? It did not develop naturally? Is that what you're...
Well, for example, recently one of the companies developed a type of corn, in this case intended to be used for ethanol production, and they made a hybrid of starch-degrading protein from deep-sea vent archaea, which are kind of similar to bacteria, but something we would never be exposed to in the food supply. And they did it because it's more heat stable. There's possibilities that that could have some health effects. It's intended for industrial use, but it's very difficult to keep this completely out of the food supply. But I'm using that more, just to illustrate the fact that you can put genes in that we've never been exposed to through consumption, viral genes. The genes that are in the current engineered plants come from bacteria. Those could never be in our food supply in that form. We used the BT gene, the insect toxin, as a microbial spray before, but it breaks down quickly in the environment, whereas in the plant it's being produced continuously and is generally more stable.
But Kent says 15 years. Okay, the differences, and we take them and note them, and many people may really care about them. But Kent says 15 years and no evidence of a problem. What do you say?
Well, that I don't think is really a sound basis for making a decision for two reasons. One, there have been no epidemiological studies, which are the kinds of studies where we look at how something affects the population. There have been, lab-based types of studies, but no epidemiology to speak of. And that, as we know from things like heart disease, looking at trans fats, things that have substantial impacts, it really takes some real study to determine some of the effects. Yes, if people were dropping dead in the street or if it had a short-term toxicity, we'd probably know about that. But it's really much more complex than that, and longer-term effects take a while to develop and are not necessarily obvious, even though they could be substantial. And for livestock, that's a very different situation. Livestock have fairly high cull rates to begin with. They die for all kinds of reasons, and they're not usually raised to late in their lifespan in any case, and there's lots of things that can affect their health. So you have to run either carefully controlled epidemiological studies or really good toxicological studies. And the ones that have been done, the tox studies that have been done, are almost all shorter term. There's a couple longer term studies. There was a review of them recently. And basically, they went down the list and found the flaws of most of those studies. So there's really not a lot of long-term studies. Mm. And the longest studies that are required, and they're in Europe, not in the U.S., are only 90 days in rodents. And those are really pretty short. So getting to the basic question, I think, is, one, the National Academy of Sciences and a number of reports have all acknowledged that these crops can, in some cases, have health effects. And I'm not suggesting that all or most of them do. Many of them, can be and probably will be safe. But the question becomes, is our regulatory system up to snuff in terms of detecting those possibly harmful examples? And I don't think it is. The FDA is a voluntary process. There are no required tests as we have for drugs and other types of things that we ingest. And as a former regulator at EPA, the regulatory system in place is not a very robust one. It's not completely useless, but it has a lot of holes in it as a safety control system. So, again, I'm not suggesting that all or most or even a lot of these products are likely to have problems, but it's very challenging to test the safety of whole foods and these kind of products. We don't have a huge history of experience doing that.
Kent Bradford, I want to bring that to you, along with lots of comments online here. But, here's Joni McPhee says, shocked and dismayed that labeling of GMO foods was not in full force from day one. Nancy Lee says, the main problem with GMOs is we are the experiment. The kind of questions that about how much time it takes and whether we've done the research. Those are the kinds of issues that have also been put forward by the proponents of Prop 37. And I'll put it to you, but here's an ad running on California TV now. This is paid for by the group with the unwieldy title, Yes on 37 for Your Right to Know If Your Food Has Been Genetically Engineered. And they're hearkening back to earlier unknowns in the realms of tobacco and DDT and herbicides.
Doctors in all parts of the country were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" See how mild and good-tasting a cigarette can be.
DDT. Used right, it is absolutely harmless to humans and animals.
The herbicide will open up ground areas.
There you go, Kent Bradford. I think that's what you're talking about. And they got captions then reading, "Cigarettes, DDT, Agent Orange. Now they say genetically engineered food is safe. If Monsanto and Dow think these foods are safe, why are they fighting our right to know what's in our food?" What about Doug Gurian-Sherman's concern that there hasn't been enough time yet, maybe not necessarily all the studies we need, or our listeners' concern that we don't want to make humans the experiment, give them the knowledge to opt out if they choose?
Well, I think the type of ad you just played shows where the Prop 37 proponents are going. That is, it's a blatant attempt to try to influence people, to make them scared of the food that's perfectly safe and that is solving environmental problems for us. So we have sort of a choice. That is, the intent of many of these crops is to reduce other strategies for controlling pests, for example, that are even worse. That is, the BT product that Dr. Sherman mentioned has replaced or eliminated the use of a huge amount of insecticides, which we know we'd rather not have in the environment, and particularly for those workers who have to apply it. So farm workers don't have to handle these chemicals, and it's been a huge boon. Everyone agrees that insecticide use has been greatly reduced in crops where we have BT. The other parts, the herbicide use to control weeds, has greatly reduced plowing. That is, we save energy. Farmers have gone from, say, 14 or 15 trips over the field to prepare from 1 year to the next to three or four. It's reduced soil erosion. It's increased organic matter and carbon in the soil. So there's a lot of environmental benefits that, if this is voted on simply out of fear, that is, if the proponents are able to convince people that somehow they should be scared of these foods and therefore you should know about them and therefore you should avoid them, and the consequence is, as Dr. Kalatsianakis mentioned, that the food manufacturers to choose not to use genetically engineered foods, we will lose those environmental benefits. We will have increased costs throughout the line. When you say, what will be the consequences? We know that non-GM and organic foods are of enormous price premium in the market, and to replace the current crops that we have with those will carry a large premium. Estimates in California alone of $4 to $5 billion a year, per year annually, just to replace those foods, if that were the strategy that that companies approach.
Do you think that if consumers
that we have to vote on the initiative we have in front of us, which is not only about labeling, but also goes ahead and authorizes a bounty hunter type of enforcement procedure, where a lawyer or anyone can go in a grocery store and sue the grocer without any cause, without any showing of damage.
If they're not labeling.
If they're not, they can just pick something off the shelf and say, I think if it's not labeled, say, I think it ought to be labeled, and take those people to court. Then the grocer has to have affidavits and documents from all of their suppliers. Those suppliers will have to have affidavits from their suppliers all the way back to the farmers. So we're all the way back to thousands and thousands of individual suppliers having to maintain enormous bureaucratic record books on the chance, I shouldn't say the chance, the likelihood, you mentioned earlier Prop 65. We have a history now of 26 years, $500 million in lawsuits, of which 75% goes to lawyers.
I got it. Do you think that it will significantly knock back genetically engineered food production in this country, Kent Bradford, if California requires this labeling?
Well, I think there's two obvious strategies, one of which would be that the food manufacturers just decide to label. And, in fact, in order to avoid this lawsuit-type enforcement, they may very well just opt for the may-contain label. It's possible to just put a may-contain GM foods on the label.
That's permitted, huh?
That's permitted. Mm-hmm. And if they do so, they may start to label even foods that are not purposely using this, because after 2019, the threshold for that labeling goes to zero, absolutely zero. So if there is any content whatsoever, there is no minimum, any content, you must label. And
Dr.
So
K, where do you think this goes?
You'll have to make a label, which will be misleading.
We've got it. Dr. K, do you think we're going to end up with less genetically engineered food in this country if this passes? And is that, how do you assess that?
Yeah, it may be that it will affect adoption up to a point, but certainly I don't believe that it's going to scale back genetic modification again, because many of these products go into livestock production, and so all of this is really excluded from the labeling discussion anyway. So it may affect production and adoption up to a point, but the real impact is going to be on the consumer's purse rather than on the farmer's side.
Doug, where do you think we're better off? Kent Bradford points out some of the costs that may come here with insecticide use that may increase, more fossil fuels in the fields, but you've got the concerns on the health side. How do you net this out?
Well, I disagree with Dr. Bradford on alternatives. There are clearly alternatives work. For example, in Iowa State University has looked at more robust, sustainable systems that don't rely on genetic engineering, and they reduce pesticide use and fertilizer use by 90% or so, get yields and profits comparable to conventional agriculture. There's somewhat higher labor involved, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think part of the problem is that was mentioned earlier is that this kind of agriculture is further simplifying our agriculture system, which is generally bad for the environment, bad for sustainability. But all of those things and resistant weeds that are developing to that simplified system are driving up herbicide use, which is more than offsetting insecticide use, and is leading to the loss of some of the benefits like tillage, no-till agriculture.
We will all be watching on November 6th. We're out of time right there, but we're informed now. Listeners, California on its way to a vote. All may be coming to a supermarket near you. Kent Bradford, Doug Gurian Sherman, Nicholas Kalitzadonakis, thank you all for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.